Please help me welcome J. Lauren Norris.
It really is amazing how many people tell a story with so much detail that you get wrapped up in. You know, we sat down to have breakfast, and they handed us these beautiful, fluffy biscuits. They were like the old ones that like Grandma made. They were flaky and fluffy, and when you pull them in half, they like covered the whole plate. And then they brought out the butter. Actually, it wasn't butter. It was that country crock spread I can't believe it's not butter. And you know, it tastes just like butter. It's a little saltier than regular butter. But I used to make my own homemade butter, and you know, we actually had to churn it ourselves right from the cow's milk. And we'd milk the cows at 5 a.m. And at some point, you're going, is there more to this story than butter and biscuits? Is there a point? Is there a reason that I need to know about the butter on the biscuits when the story really is about how your grandmother had a heart attack? That's what I want to talk about in this episode of Leading Leaders. Stay tuned. I'm J. Lauren Norris with Leading Leaders Podcast. I really am surprised often at the details that people include in the story. Sometimes they're not relevant at all. And sometimes the details that are left out of the story, they carry more weight than the details that are included. I know that sounds weird. But we're about to watch a quick demonstration of a Story Power coaching class from Story Power Masterclass Live. I believe it was 2020 or 2021. And we had about 15 people in that class, which is kind of the normal size. And one of the participants came up and shared her story. Actually, everybody does in the class as part of the exercise. But you're going to hear Christina Knowles share her story. And then I'm going to tell her story again with a little different twist to it. And then explain a little bit about the details by telling one more story. And the whole thing's about 6 minutes. That'll be part of our podcast today. And then I'll come back and discuss that a little bit right after this.
I see you in prison. And that was the same as you can do anything you set your mind to. Who's next?
I'll go.
Bring it on. You know the two of you, it's getting down to one of y'all is going to be last. Right? Call to action.
Just being able to hear God when he speaks to you. And not be uncomfortable with not hearing him.
Okay. I can make that work.
Okay. It was 5:59 a.m. and my beautiful baby boy was born. I was so excited. I could not believe. I just wanted to make sure he had all 10 toes and all 10 fingers. And then everybody left. They were tired from me pushing. The baby had been born. Griffin was finally here. And then the nurse walks in and says, how do you feel about the news that the doctor gave you? And I said, what news? And she's like, you don't know? And I said, no, I don't know. Well, I knew then that something was wrong. I was completely alone and by myself. Nobody was in my bedroom, you know, my hospital room. And I know God now did this on purpose. She said, I'm legally not allowed to tell you, so I'll be right back. So she left and the doctor came back, and because Griffin was born at 5:59 a.m., which was so crucial, that one doctor was getting off while the other doctor was coming in. Mm-hmm. So when the new doctor came in, he goes, your son was born with a hole in his heart. Mm-hmm. And I was going to keep him in NICU, but I feel something and I'm just gonna let you take him home. And I said, well, why? He goes, I don't know why. He goes, but if he turns purple or blue, call 911 immediately. It means that his heart has filled up and he will start to die. And then he left the room and I was all by myself. And I immediately went to God and I said this, and I said, God, please send me a heart every day so that I know Griffin will be okay. And I laugh sometimes because that's a rhyme. I'm like, what? And then the heart started to appear every day after I left the hospital. And it's a potato chip, it's a rock. It's a formation in the sky of a cloud. It's a heart. And now Griffin is 23 years old. We had a cardiologist assigned to us at his birth. And that cardiologist
You don't have to, but
no, I do.
If he turns purple or blue, call 911.
Oh, gosh.
Well, that's great advice. I mean, is there something you should have told me prior to that statement? I'm just thinking. But actually, the nurse had already said, there's something you should know, but I can't legally tell you. That's almost as bad as when the wife says to the husband, we need to talk. Because now it's just all this anxiety. You're waiting for something to the other shoe to drop. And when the doctor said to me, your son has a hole in his heart, I thought, look, I was worried about it. He had 2 eyes, 2 ears, a nose, and 10 fingers and toes. I mean, who would have thought about make sure he has a whole heart? But he said to me, if he turns purple or blue, call 911, because it means that his heart's filled up. And my heart sank. He walked out, and I was left in the room by myself. And I talked to the only other person in the room, and I said, God, you're going to have to give me a sign every single day. Send me a heart somewhere, some way, somehow, so I will know that that's your testimony, like the rainbow against the flood, that you are not going to let my son die. Well, we're 23 years later, and the hearts haven't stopped coming. You might see them on my social media. It's a tree that looks like a heart, or 2 ears together that look like a heart, or a potato chip, or a cloud, or wherever the heart shows up. It's still God's little whisper to me. I got this. I just want to encourage you. Sometimes the world is deafening. Sometimes that declaration by the doctor, he has a hole in his heart, and if he turns blue, call 911, seems overwhelming. But just listen to the Father. Because he's got this, and he can prove it. In the way of stories, especially one that's heart-wrenching like that, if you have a kid, that's your only qualification. Because at some point, you ask the question, at what point are they out of the weeds? My phone rang, what was it, 1:15 in the morning? And some guy goes, is this Lauren Norris? And I'm like, how the heck would you know that? And I said, yeah. And he said, there's been an accident. The truck is not going to make it. It's burning to the ground as we speak. And part of my mind, my human mind went, did my son get out of that truck? Because it was upside down on 114 or on 121 at Grapevine Highway. Upside down. Everybody else called 911 and said, there's a grass fire. This guy stops and realizes the fire is actually a truck. And then my spirit said, listen, dummy, he wouldn't have known your name if the boy wasn't standing there telling him what number to call, because his phone was inside the truck, melting along with the truck. Mm-hmm. And that was the week after he had his 21st birthday. Mm-hmm. They're never out of the weeds. Mm-hmm. It can happen at any moment. That's right. The question is, how do we know that daddy's watching? And those kind of stories, sometimes the more detail you leave out, mm-hmm. and we'll talk about the co-opted intimate right after lunch, the more detail you leave out, the more I paint the picture mm-hmm. of what you're saying without saying. And then it becomes my picture and not yours. And I'm going to teach you that.
You know, in this series, we've already talked about the co-opted intimate and the word picture. We talked about how a word picture, if you're not careful, you can paint a word picture that actually triggers someone into deeper pain. The problem with the word picture is the assumption that when you walk through that moment, the way you saw it, your perception, your perspective, how you felt about it, the emotions that it evoked in you are exactly the same for every single person. That's not true. But what is true is that the common core of emotions across the human spectrum, I mean, unless you're a sociopath or some other truly malady-based disassociation between emotions of normal humans and yourself, unless you fall into that fringe category, the normal range of human emotions are so common that everybody, for the most part, has experienced them. Anger, the frustration, the pain, the fear, the joy, the excitement. These are the normal course of a human day. When the stories that you tell demonstrate those things, what happens in the mind is that we tend to go we tend to go back to a place where we felt that before. Now, if you're not careful, what happens is you paint a word picture so detailed, like the butter on the biscuit and what flavor or brand it was, that you lose people in the emotional resonance of the moment. They're so stuck in the details, they're thinking, I don't think I've ever had that kind of butter. My grandma's biscuits don't look like that. So big they cover the plate, like the whole plate? Then these are the questions that are going on in their mind, and the idea that they're connecting with how heartbroken you are because you're never going to get to have those biscuits again with that grandmother because now she's in heaven. That's a challenge because you've disassociated your story from the emotions that you're trying to work with. You want people to be able to connect with you, to follow along the story, to feel what you felt, or at a minimum, be able to feel that way, whatever memory they're recalling of their own. But the chances are very high that as you describe a moment and you describe how it felt, the revelations that were going on, the realizations that you experienced, the aha moments, the pain that you walked through and the solution that you found for it, the purpose of the story is to connect that with the audience in a way that doesn't sound like you're just teaching them or selling them something. Instead, you're conveying an idea that they can resonate with and go, yeah, I've been there. I felt just like that. I didn't like it. I want a solution. Now suddenly they're asking for your help because they know you've been there. I was watching one of the little TV shows that my wife and I like to watch last night. It's called Fire Country. And in the particular setting of this episode, there are a couple of kids trapped in a cave. And one of the firefighters, in his days past, had played in the same cave. In fact, it was like a ritual or a hazing, however, whatever you're going to call it, that if you were on the baseball team, you had to kind of swim from one cave to the other. And it's a dangerous place to be. Narrow passageways, underwater currents can be really dangerous. But the firefighters were there trying to rescue two kids that were trapped inside there. And one of the firefighters, back in his day, even though he got busted swimming in these caves and got in trouble by his parents and the firefighters, he had found another way into the caves. And he wanted to go around to get into the cave in a different way to afford this rescue. But in so doing, he abandoned everything that he had been told to do. He was disobeying direct orders. He was not in the space that he was supposed to. Other things could have gone wrong. He had another way of pulling it off. He had a hero complex. He wanted to be the hero. He wanted to do something spectacular. And his ambition drove him to behave in a different way. There's different ways to tell a story. There's different ways to come to the conclusion. There's different ways to feel about it. In the end, he got himself in trouble trying to be the hero. He had another way around. He knew how to solve the problem a different way. His solution would have worked eventually if he'd actually found the entrance. Turns out they had to save the kids a whole different way. What he wanted to do wasn't going to work anyway. But he had been there. He had actually been in that cave before. He'd actually been in that water before. He'd actually done it a different way than anybody else. And so he thought his solution would be the right solution. Maybe you found yourself at the feet of a mentor, a teacher, a trainer, who has been thoroughly convinced they've got this all figured out. They've done this before. They've worked it out. And the story that they're telling, well, it doesn't demonstrate that. It doesn't demonstrate their success. It's much like the firefighters, like, oh, no, I know, I went in that back way before. But they've got 30 people out there searching for this back way, and the back way no longer exists. Maybe the mountainside has moved. It happens. Rocks crumble. But the way that he had determined he was going to help was not a solution. See, what happens with a lot of storytellers is we get wrapped up either in the details of the story and we forget that we're trying to get to a point of a solution to begin with. Or we presume that the solution that we have matches the pain that we live through and it's going to work for everybody. And if we don't spend the time with the story, if we don't spend the time with the solution, if we haven't walked through the pain well enough, then chances are we're going to point out a pain that we lived through but doesn't resonate with anybody else. Or we're going to find a pain that a lot of people have lived through, a problem. I mean, how many kids have been trapped in that particular cave on that particular mountainside? Well, according to the episode, just the two. Although hundreds have been in and out of there. So hundreds have found the solution that two didn't find. And now we're trying to create a new solution that isn't going to work. There are a lot of people, especially in the self-help industry, who've done a very similar thing. They've recognized the pain or the problem in their own life. They realize there are a few other people who have had the same pain or problem in their life. Then they craft a story about their own life, and whether it's 2 minutes or 10 minutes or 45 minutes or 3 hours, at the end of the telling of their story, nobody's any the wiser. The solution is as useless as the caved-in caves. You can't get there from here. Now, it doesn't mean there's not peril, there's not pain, there's not tragedy, there's not trauma. It doesn't mean they're not going to tell an entertaining story. The question is, what's the point when you get there? Have we spent all of our time talking about the brand of the butter? The flavor of the biscuits? When the real story is, stop eating the 14 pounds of bacon every morning for breakfast because that leads to high cholesterol, which leads to heart disease, which leads to bye-bye, Grandma. Are we solving a problem that isn't a problem? I remember a client, would-be client, turned out not to be a client. In our initial session, this client said, I have a solution for this problem. And I said, great. How universal is the solution? What do you mean? Well, you've identified your target market. Women, after a divorce or being widowed, who are trying to maintain their sexual purity until they're in another legal marriage relationship. Very laudable. Fits with my core beliefs. I got no issue with that. But does the system, the solution, the process, does it work? Well, yeah, it works. Great. Is it such a provable system that it works whether you're 35 and divorced or 17 and single? Well, I don't know. I'm 40 and divorced, not 17 and single, so I don't know if it works for them or not. Interesting. So the thing that I know about the Rubik's Cube is that it doesn't care about your age. The Rubik's Cube would never ask, are you 40 and divorced or 17 and single? Are you male or female or otherwise? It doesn't ask that question. The Rubik's Cube says, if you know the solution, solve it. If you have a solution, it works. Every time. H2O. If you mix two parts of hydrogen and one part of oxygen, then you have water. Not sometimes. Not part of the time, every time. That's the solution. That kind of solution is what you've got to be able to come to. Again, if the details of your story take so long to get there that, like our friend in the video that I showed you, she ran out of time before she got to the point. She ran out of time before she got to the call to action. Her story was fascinating. Her story was endearing. Her story was about a common problem. Her story was about a reasonable request. Her story was about something powerful, emotional, and it still drives her life 23 years later. That's all awesome. But when she walked away from the moment 2 minutes in, there wasn't a solution. There wasn't a call to action. There was an awareness, but now what do I do with it? See, the thing that we want in the storytelling isn't that we have to lecture. We don't have to give 5 points in a poem. But we want that story to come to a conclusion in a way that people have an idea how to walk away with it and go, oh, yeah. something like that happened to me. I hadn't thought of doing that. That's a great idea. I want to do that. Show me how to do that. I want to spend more time with you. When you finish telling a story, whether it's 1 minute or 2 minutes or 20 minutes, the desired effect is that people want more from you. They want to hear more stories. They want to hear more solutions. They want to know that you've lived through what they've lived through and you've found a better way to do it. If the story doesn't take them there, what was the point of the story? Was it entertainment? Was it to kill time? Was it to make you feel better? All of those are, I guess, acceptable, but really shouldn't be the point of the story. See, the point of the story, I saw someone do it masterfully yesterday. She's a coaching client. We've been working together. I think we probably got about 8 hours under our belt together so far. But as she was telling her story, in the middle of the story, the context of the story, the actual bits of the story, outlined one of the hacks that she makes available when she's your coach. And she just said, I was traveling and I did this. And then when I got there, I did this. And this is the result of it. And what she did resulted in 500,000 new customers. Can you imagine? But it was that one hack. It was the one thing she did. And what she didn't do is go, here's the hack you have to have. You need to do this and then this. And it wasn't teaching. It wasn't preaching. It wasn't cajoling or bribing. It was, here's what I did. And here's what the results were. Now, if you'd like to have some other ideas like that, send me an email and I'll send you a download. It's got several ideas on it. And if you really need somebody to walk through that process with you, that's exactly what I'm here for. It was masterfully done. And when we embed the things that we want to demonstrate into the story as the course of the action, people walk away with the story like those little graspers in your whiskers. You carry them for a long time. You deposit them somewhere else because that lesson stays in you. Not because it was a lecture, not because it was a school lesson, not because it was 7 points or 5 points in a poem. It was because it was embedded in a story that you'll always recall. And you'll remember the trip that made me 500,000 new customers because I made one phone call. I followed one process that I always follow. This time it paid off in a new way. It doesn't get any better than that. That's the kind of story you want to remember. That's the kind of story you want to hold on to. And then you want to recall that when you're traveling, when that hack is going to work for you and bring you possibly 500,000 new customers. That's when you're looking for that information. Oh yeah, if you want that hack, by the way, her name is Amy Varley. You can find her on my social media. Just reach out to Amy Varley and go, what did you do in that story? And she'll know what you're talking about. And if she doesn't, she can ask me. But when you tell a good story, your solutions are hidden in the story itself, because that's what the story is about. The secrets that you've learned, the hacks you've created, the solutions you've developed to overcome the pain that you've experienced, that's what everybody wants from you. So tell stories that get them there. Don't get so lost in the detail that they're wondering what the brand of the butter was or the flavor of the biscuits. Unless you're selling biscuits, nobody cares. Nobody cares about those details. And if you need help with your storytelling, for marketing, for ministry, for whatever, StoryPowerMasterclass.com, or send me an email, or go to StoryPowerCoach.com. You'll find all the details you need right there. I'm J. Lauren Norris with Leading Leaders Podcast for Tell It Like It Is TV. Have a blessed day.
Lauren is a master teacher on storytelling, and I learned so much. I'm really going to have to sit down and go back through everything, and I think I might have to have some more coffees with Lauren, but it was totally worth my time, and I really highly recommend it if you're looking to grow your ministry, grow your business, grow your career. Lauren will serve you well.
Thank you. Subscribe now for our extensive video library of leadership lessons promoting faith, family, and freedom.